Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am joined today by Christian Niedermüller. He's the CEO of Blocktrade, and we've got a very, very important topic to cover. We are going to talk about the wider role of exchanges with blockchain, crypto, and Web3, what's been happening over the last couple of years, some of the challenges that we've seen, and how certain exchanges out there are trying to do things differently. Christian, how are you doing this evening?
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for inviting me. I'm doing very well. I just came from the football pitch, so I'm deeply relaxed. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation.
That's awesome. Awesome. So you're feeling invigorated, hopefully not too tired, no injuries, no sore muscles. Hopefully the brain is still firing and we can have a good session with this particular topic. Christian, for those who don't know you and specifically those who don't know Blocktrade, tell us a little bit about your background and what is it that you get into.
Yeah, happy to do so. So, I mean, I did a classical traditional finance career, I would say. I was 15 years in banking and private equity in various demanding roles in international banking groups and private equity houses. And actually did a lot of restructuring and transformation there. And I come maybe later to that, why this was as well important for my current role. But then I was also investing already in insurtechs and fintechs. I was establishing back then the FinTech Advisory Board of the Austrian Finance Ministry and then tapped into the blockchain topic already like 8 years ago. And since then was like, it was like the rabbit hole, like the famous rabbit hole, was diving into it. I was co-founding the Digital Asset Association Austria, where I'm still a board member. I co-founded a few entities, a few ventures like Smape Capital, a venture capital fund in the scene, Dyke, which is an infrastructure provider, one of the biggest validators out there. And since 1.5 years, I'm happily the CEO of Blocktrade, where we completely turned around the business model, the exchange, and so on. And I'm very happy to tell you more about that in a bit. Yeah.
Very excited to hear more about that. We've heard about Crypto Valley in Switzerland. We know that Estonia is a digital superpowered nation. We know that France is trying to make a big play for CBDC, and even the UK is trying to be a crypto nation. But Austria, tell me a little bit about the Austrian crypto and blockchain scene, because there are some surprise packages that have come out of Austria, but yet for some reason, Austria doesn't seem to get as much respect or as big a name for the work that you guys have put in as maybe you should.
Yeah, I mean, there are the famous examples. I mean, I'm not sure how many people know that Bitpanda is an Austrian, was one of the first Austrian unicorns. And I mean, I know the guys pretty well. They are awesome. They did an awesome work. Then there are a few other really interesting place in the blockchain infrastructure area there in Austria. I mean, for me, I'm Austrian, but I live in Germany and I work in Luxembourg and Estonia. So for me, I see myself as more like a European global mind, being some kind of everywhere, still having the Austrian roots in me and very much covering it from my role at the Digital Asset Association Austria. But like, yeah, I'm everywhere, I think, around Europe. Yeah.
And I guess that's probably quite a potent example of how the European system borderless approach to Web3, where you've got transparent or relatively transparent regulation in certain pockets, but the ability to operate in multiple jurisdictions, set up where you feel it's most beneficial, make the most of the kind of local talent or local arbitrage opportunities, depending on which way you look at it. A lot of people assume that America is the only option for big blockchain, but I want to believe that Europe has something of a case to play for being a major area for blockchain and Web3 development. So for me, your story specifically is just a microcosm of that. So Christian, back to you. Give us a little bit of the story. Obviously, you mentioned that you came into Blocktrade. It was already established at a certain point and you've been the new custodian for the business. But take us a little bit back. Give us the Blocktrade origin story, please.
Yeah, so Blocktrade existed since 2018 and was then like, yeah, going through some waves, I would say. And yeah, when I was asked to join 2 years ago, that it was a little bit of process until I decided. And I was in touch with several bigger centralized exchanges, because back then I was founding already the venture capital fund in the space. I was still very much in banking. So I wanted to do something more or less in between, to also bridge the gap between traditional finance and crypto. And a centralized exchange is actually pretty interesting for that. That's why I specifically also chose a smaller one where I can play a bigger role with the CEO, where I can change and have to change a lot of things. And that was exactly the situation, how I found BlockTrade 1.5 years ago. There were only around 15 employees. The business model was not ready, more or less, to be scaled. It was nothing special. So I had to change a lot. And we changed the whole, more or less, leadership team. We changed the strategy. We changed the whole platform. And we grew from 15 to 70 until FTX happened and completely redid the platform. So from being just a normal, like more or less boring exchange, we changed completely to with a very sophisticated Bitpanda Coinbase-like broker model, let's put it that way, with a very special niche strategies towards gamification and gaming. And from the 15, from the beginning, after FTX, we had to go down to around 50 again. Only three left. So you can see the whole transformation this organization went through in the last 1.5 years. And this brings me back more or less to what I said with the restructuring and transformation know-how I already had from traditional banking. I also had to use it more or less with BlockTrade to really find the right team, find the right strategy, also scale down again after FTX a little bit the operations, find creative strategies to position BlockTrade in a very special way so that we are interesting for customers and for investors alike. So this is a little bit the story. And I think now, more than 1.5 years later, mid 2023, we have an amazing team. Now I'm very proud of the first half year. We did release after release after release, and the platform is 90% there where I wanted to be. Yeah. And here and there, we still need to tweak it. We will always tweak it for sure. Yeah. And add very interesting elements. And I think we are at a very interesting point now. You know, we see a lot of exchanges having problems with their volumes. I mean, I'm very honest there. We also, after FTX, we completely had to reevaluate our business model, which we happily already started in August, actually, last year. So we have probably a few months ahead of the game back then, which was definitely an advantage. But if a lot of the exchanges, centralized exchanges, are struggling now because of FTX, but also because of what has happened up after that. And so, a lot of trust has been lost. And I fully understand that a lot of Texas are struggling. And that's why you see a lot of consolidation, I think, the next 6 to 18 months. Even if there's a bull market coming, I think you will see a lot of consolidation. And we already see that, you know, a lot of exchanges are shutting down, like you saw Paxful and others. And we get customer portfolios offered now, already the last few weeks. So you see that consolidation is happening. And I think the fittest and those with the most appealing positioning will survive this consolidation game until hopefully the next bull market kicks in at some point.
Got you. And let's wheel it back a little bit, because for those people who aren't as familiar with exchanges as maybe we are, and you know, we look back at the role that exchanges have traditionally played, you've seen a proliferation of small, relatively gonzo, mostly always digital exchanges pop up that were sometimes dealing in one specific coin, right? There were some Bitcoin only exchanges, still are. There were some sort of token specific exchanges, always trying to be the bridge between people who had fiat money and people who wanted crypto. This is the entry point for a lot of people into the world of Web3, into the world of cryptocurrencies. You have to buy it from somewhere, and exchange provides you that service. Over the course of time, those exchanges took on more sophisticated services, became a little bit more like capital markets type functionality, investment bank type functionality, started providing more and more ways to invest, more and more features, and so on and so forth. And so you've seen a gradual increase in sophistication of exchanges, I guess. But you still see 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 brand names out there. And as you mentioned, FTX is the brand name, but we saw a year ago or so gradual loss or fear or concern around whether crypto is safe, whether blockchains are safe, whether this is legitimate technology or not. Whereas in reality, what we saw with FTX specifically was a failure of capitalism. It was a mixture of greed, poor risk controls. It was abuse of the system. In none of these particular stories did you see a blockchain get hacked. You didn't necessarily see wallets of customers being corrupted or hacked. Misuse of funds on the exchange, absolutely. But broadly speaking, blockchain was blamed for a lot of the issues that we saw from less reputable exchanges. Do you think that that trust is starting to come back? Do you think that the market is starting to come back, or do you still have some concerns on that?
Yeah, I think it's a bit two-sided. I think it's also about the exchanges to bring the trust back. So, I mean, we're playing also this communication game, but we also had to because the required registrations you have to do in a lot of countries now bring a lot more like sophistication, as you put it, into the centralized exchange market. So, and yeah, when we are now like talking to investors and also to our customers, we definitely are highlighting where we have registrations as a virtual asset service provider in Europe, namely for us in Estonia, Slovenia, and Italy, and how compliant we are. I think this is definitely something exchanges are putting very much in the front of their pitch decks right now, because it's definitely something very important, or which custodian you have, how you're taking care about the security of the digital assets and the fiat money. So I think this is definitely something very important for the customers. And like in the speeches I did on my recent roadshow, more or less from the token sale, there I always highlighted how we take care about the security of the funds, yeah, that we more or less over-collateralize the crypto funds. We are never touching the customer funds. I think this has been also very important for a lot of customers after FTX, where they mingled too much with customer funds. So I think, yeah, this is definitely a very important point. A lot are highlighting and have to highlight. And yeah, and that's also where you see also a lot of the consolidation I mentioned earlier. Yeah, I mean, we are also based in Estonia to a large extent, actually, from an FTE perspective and a technology perspective. And there you saw a number of 1,800 registrations as a crypto asset service provider, a virtual asset service provider, going down to 500 now. And we are, for example, only one of 10 who got the most recent authorization upgrade. So you see that a lot of consolidation and selection or survival of the fittest is now happening. Yeah. From a technological point of view and from a compliance point of view as well. Yeah. So this is definitely the state of exchanges in this respect, I think. Yeah.
There's nothing quite like a token sale kind of road trip around the houses. And I'm assuming you went to kind of multiple jurisdictions, multiple different locations, crypto focused, investment focused, retail, and also institutional. There's nothing quite like a roadshow to be able to surface all of the bias, all of the kind of the unfounded or irrational concerns at any particular point in time. What were some of the questions that you got asked that either, I don't want to say that you didn't expect, but what were the kind of common questions that you were like, should we still have to be asking these questions now? Or maybe the questions that surprised you from what people were asking about block trade or exchanges?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's a very special situation. The road trip or road show was a very special situation because we have more than 5,000 shareholders. So there were a lot of questions for me as well on the state of our exchange. They haven't heard too much in person from the CEO. So this was very well perceived, actually. I mean, we are also talking now remotely, digitally to each other, but the direct contact is still so precious. So this is like the first point I was taking away from that. And during our token sale, you also saw from the top 15 nations that invested into our token sale, I visited 13 of them. So you see the impact of a personal touch, of a personal contact point. So that's the first thing. The second thing on questions, or I didn't expect, I mean, I did like this pitch or this presentation for 140, 150 times. So I've heard all the questions because I also did a ton of AMAs, Ask Me Anything sessions up front. So I knew a lot. I mean, well, definitely a lot came down also to, are my funds safe? Where are you going? Are you going into the NFT space? Really offer this and that token. What was also very interesting for us, we will be one of the first exchanges which will fully tokenize its shareholder base. So we'll not just more or less offer all kinds of token on the exchange, but we will also tokenize our whole entire shareholder base, which is also quite something unique. So for our shareholders, but also for our customers who are interested, for example, later this year to have their shares tokenized or buy the first tokenized shares from an exchange. Yeah. So yeah.
That's like, super interesting. Let's stick into that one for a second, actually, because that's something you don't hear very much these days. People will say, you know, we'll tokenize real estate, we'll tokenize vehicles, we'll tokenize watches, we'll tokenize arts, all of this sort of thing. Why is tokenized shareholding interesting to your particular business?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think it's something unique, and actually it makes your shares more fungible. Yeah. So you don't have to go, we don't have to do an IPO or have to find a secondary marketplace where we should sell our shares in a traditional way. And then I don't know if you've ever seen which route a share takes. If someone buys a share, buys an Apple share, it takes a route of eight to 12 intermediaries until the share goes from one place, from one account more or less to the other one. It's like 8 to 12 intermediaries. And once we have tokenized our shareholder base, it goes peer to peer. So that's from a cost perspective, very interesting. It's from an efficiency perspective, very, very interesting. I mean, it's also boiled down to environmental topics. It's better. You're not involving so much energy, not so many people. And it's also safer. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Less frictions and less topics could appear with one of the intermediaries. Yeah. So, and what we will also offer then is after actually the second equity fundraiser we will offer on the platform that you can do peer-to-peer transfers. And once, and that's also something very interesting right now happening, once secondary marketplaces from a security token perspective are being established, maybe it's also on our end, then we are very much looking forward to work together with these secondary marketplaces for security token.
Interesting. So very much drinking your own Kool-Aid, very much working within the ethos and the capabilities of Web3. Also, it just makes kind of good sense technically. Again, I think if you go to one of the major share exchanges, you go to eToro, you go to Robinhood and so on and so forth, and you put your money into an Apple stock, you expect it's going to turn up, right? People probably don't feel the pain as much of, oh, my shares didn't arrive on time or my shares didn't arrive at all. But at the same time, you're incurring costs. Like you said, each one of those eight intermediaries is going to have to pay for their services because they're providing a service. It's an inefficient service. And so who's the person that ends up paying for that? Probably the customer. So interesting to see that evolve. Let's talk about leveling up. So we talked earlier in the beginning of the show that there's a very wide number of exchanges. For the most part, they are increasing their sophistication, but are still pretty much doing the same thing, right? You can go in, you can buy, you can sell different cryptos, larger baskets of crypto, smaller baskets of cryptos. There might be some interesting trading pairs. They might have some more sophisticated analytics on the platform, but by and large, kind of for the vanilla user, there's not a huge amount of differentiation. For the super pro users, maybe there's some here and there, but at the same time, you've still got a very samey experience in exchanges. You might have some regional differences, you might have some language differences, but this is starting to feel a little bit like a commodity area. But how are you guys at Blocktrade thinking of leveling up, changing the experience and differentiating in an already busy and consolidating market?
Yeah, very good question. And that's exactly what we asked ourselves, or what I asked the team more or less 1.5 years ago. I said, how are we special? You know, how are we differentiating ourselves? How can we offer something special which attracts more customers and lets us keep the customers, you know? And then like exactly 1 year ago, after we did the first like revamping of the platform, we had a strategy offsite and looked very much at a lot of different angles and markets, different markets, and analyzed our own user base and looked at demographics, at their behavior. And we had a lot of data points from a very interesting data source and found out that the whole gaming community is very much the same as our user base. Yeah. So, and we also knew kind of and did some questionnaires, yeah, some surveys, that our user base is also interested in little mini games, not in the Fortnite games of things and stuff like that. So we said, okay, let's test this. And let's not just like, let's gamify the user experience in a way with how we have never seen it before, and not just gamify the user experience and keep the users in a very responsible way coming and on the platform, but also let's put some nice games on the platform so that the users don't just come to Blocktrade to buy once a month like some Bitcoin or some other token, let's like keep them coming and keep our brand not just associated with crypto, with buying Bitcoin. Let's associate our brand with something else as well. Let's make it something special. So that's why then we set sales. And from my perspective, and there are my colleagues, Sviko and Gabe, also our CEO and our chief growth officer, they more or less, they designed a level experience, which has never been seen before. We combined it with like 50 levels, with crypto Greek god avatars, with challenges you have, like from the onboarding until more or less the savings plan or the like you're opening up on the platform. And we will also integrate this as well into the whole gaming experience. So, and I mean, when I said it, we also promised to ourselves that we want to do this in a responsible way. So we know that it is a gray area to some extent, yeah, that you should not like talk your customers into investing more than that they can afford. Yeah, that's why we also set up in the same time a very interesting academy so that users are being educated in the same time about responsible investing, about what they're investing in, and then combined it with this whole gamification effort. And now, I mean, I have seen a lot of exchanges, but I haven't seen something like that where you have avatars and you're leveling up with everything you do. People come back, get their XP points like in gaming when they do something on the platform, and our users love it. You know, like they're already comparing their avatars when, like, I have level 11, I have level 18, and you get different kind of benefits as well with every level. So this is very much appreciated. It's only the first version of the gamification exercise, everything home built by us. And the next step is now that we involve in games as well on the platform. Yeah, so this is, I'm very much looking forward to this because this makes us then even more special and not just a random exchange, let's put it that way, yeah.
I like that. And we'll come on to gaming in a bit, which is obviously a personally interesting topic for me. The aspect you've talked about there in terms of the why or how to differentiate are quite interesting. So part of it's the user experience. You mentioned that let's not make this a kind of a confusing vanilla or overly technical experience for users, because we are still relatively early, right, in Web3's journey. And the exchange is the very first touch point. Typically, unless you happen to, you know, go peer-to-peer and receive some crypto from a friend or from a relative or from work, wherever it is, you know, your first entry point is probably going to be a swap between fiat and crypto. And so at some point you're going to need an exchange, and that's going to be either a deeply scary moment for you. I remember one of my very early experiences using the Binance Bridge, and I thought, you know, I'm moving 50 bucks here. And I was like, this is going to blow up. This is going to go horribly wrong. I probably spent an hour to 2 hours on a readme, and I still had to get bailed out by Kierfinlow Bates, of all people. He knows he was there. He knows this story. And if he's listening, he knows what happened. So, you know, this was one of those very, very early experiences. And I consider myself to be moderately technically savvy. I work in Web3, and yet still I find certain aspects of exchanges to be complicated. Swaps are not necessarily super easy. DEXs have got better these days, but it is still not a simple experience or not an intuitive experience a lot of the time, because we're still new. People haven't developed muscle memory in this space. So the role of education for exchanges is significant. Education is something that is not always best done with the most technical foot forward. Unless you are engineering minded, or you're, you know, one of that small proportion of the population who just love getting deep as quickly as possible, a lot of people do not learn through empirical, complicated things. Gamification can be a significant enabler for that education. And as you said, if you take the kind of the philanthropic responsibility of being an exchange and helping people to get better at crypto or get better at blockchain as they go, and you can guide them through that in a rewarding, you know, even enjoyable, engaging way, you've probably got a better chance of retaining customers. Or when somebody says, oh, I'm really interested in crypto, but I don't really know what I'm doing, people could say, well, go check out Blocktrade. I don't have to spend 2 hours explaining it to you. Just follow the steps. Right. Yeah, start with 10 bucks, start with 20 bucks. And, you know, in X number of days time, you'll probably feel more proficient and you may have had some fun doing it. That's kind of the direction of travel, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, for me, it's always, I mean, coming from a traditional finance space and like also having the own reputation on the line, you know, I'm trying to do everything to stay very much compliant. So what we did, for example, with our whole own design gamification engine, how we call it internally, is we went to the regulator, actually. So we went to the FIU, the FSA, and to the Tech Sport in Estonia and showed them what we were building and how it is connected to our own token, and got a green light from before we even started the gamification engine and our token sale, got a green light that this is okay and this is fine. And this was also very important for me, like that this is okay. And as you said, connected to educating people. That's what I also tried on my roadshow, explaining a lot. Yeah, some grassroots explanations all the time is also needed. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and make it as easy as possible. I mean, like, I'm this week here with my parents. I handed over to my father recently a book about, it's called the Orange Pill, which is very easily written about Bitcoin. And he's 75 years old. And so he's from his friends, you know, in his age, he always gets these comments about Bitcoin, about crypto, that it's a scam or it's like it's money laundering. So I said, I'm constantly sending him now links. And that's what I mean with educating, links about how sophisticated we are arriving now with BlackRock around the corner, with ETFs around the corner, with all kinds of blue chips having blockchain elements integrated, and so on and so forth. And like this book I gave to my father is also something where I think our academy, that's how I see our academy, educating those who have to be educated and who want to learn something. And that's why I think this is so important.
I thought for a minute there you were going to say you keep sending him articles of all of the money laundering and all of the fraud that goes on in Web 2 and regular banking, but then you've been there as well, so that doesn't work well for you.
and of the fine some banks have to pay on a constant basis. Yeah, that's right. I'm also sending that over. Yeah.
Dinner at your house must be tricky when the friends and family come around. Let's talk about gamification, because I mean that's already an interesting start that you looked specifically for regulatory engagement around how do we get the gaming elements of what we do, because the term gaming in and of itself, at least in the English language, is used interchangeably between computer games and gambling.
Yes. Right?
Or the gambling industry has renamed itself into gaming because that is a more socially acceptable title for what is still putting money at risk in exchange for return. Whereas what we're talking about with gamification or gaming is trying to target an outcome. We're trying to reach an outcome. In this case, it could be education, familiarity, loyalty, I guess, is still allowed in that space. What you're not looking to do is just trying to have people overreach or spend beyond their means and so on and so forth. And part of the gamification, I guess, is also putting in place good risk mechanisms, you know, reminders, doing your own research, taking profits, stop losses, et cetera, et cetera. You know, when you're into pro trading, which I'm not, but if you're into that space, you know, the traders are not just kind of hodling and kind of jumping in, buying a bunch of crypto and riding the bull run. These guys are very sophisticated in what they do. And that's not what the average retail investor does. So my suspicion is that there's a lot that we need to do in terms of helping to level up people's familiarity with this. At the same time, and I've said this on previous shows, I'm not sure if we want to encourage the financialization of everything. Right? Because in that, we lose maybe some of the fun, or maybe we overly focus on profit and gains as opposed to outcomes and processes and collaboration and the jobs we've always been trying to do. It just happens to be that now we have a digital asset that makes that easier, or we have a peer-to-peer process that takes out 8 intermediaries. Right? We don't have to be using complex financial language to explain that benefit, and you didn't. Right? Yeah. So I think there's plenty of runway for gamification, but then there's also games on top of that, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, for us, that's the interesting element, you know, like integrating as well games and enabling communities to have not just the pure Web3 experience, which is always, as you know, a bit burdensome. I don't know how sophisticated into Web3 all of your listeners are, but there's always a barrier for Web3 games. And this is the, for now, yeah, at least, yeah. And this is the non-custodial wallet and more or less always the route through a browser and the non-mobile route. So what we aim to do is to bridge this gap between Web2 gaming and Web3 gaming. And I'm definitely into gaming and not gambling. So the only thing we probably aim to do is skill gaming. And so everything where only luck is involved, we are not touching this, because everything would require a gambling license. We're definitely not touching it, just for additional information. And But other than that, we really want to bridge the gap. You know, I've been to Japan actually exactly one month ago at the IBS Kyoto, and this was fascinating for me. You know, like there, I for the first time was fully convinced that we are going in the right direction, because blockchain and gaming in Japan is more or less the same thing, almost. Yeah, the whole like blockchain floor at IBS was 50% covered with games or blockchain games and Web2 games having Web3 elements and so on and so forth. So it's everything is between gamification and gaming in Japan. And I'm also going to the Korean Blockchain Week in 1.5 months, because this market is so dynamic and so interesting. We can learn so much from these markets. And what's really interesting is to get a lot of Web3 games on the platform and bridge the gap then, so that they can, for example, trade in the in-game currencies, in-game token, their in-game elements, and more or less go seamlessly between games, between crypto and fiat, between in-game currencies and Bitcoin and other token. I think this opens up, if it's seamless enough, this opens up like a whole new gameverse which can occur and which can very much merge actually with the whole crypto ecosystem. And I think it's one of the biggest chances for digital assets, for crypto actually to go to, is actually gaming. Yeah, in-game items, in-game enrichment, character, avatar, evolvement, and extraction is very, very interesting. Yeah, and yeah. And if you ever played a game and had in-game items or XP points, diamonds, and what so on, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And let's talk about the role of the exchange in that story, because we could turn this into a gaming podcast and I could talk about this for hours, which I'm pretty sure you don't want to do. Probably want to have a shower and get some dinner. But also, more specifically, we're here to talk about exchanges. And what do you see as the importance of the role of exchanges in that world, where you've got digital assets coming from games, you've got digital assets coming from crypto, and you've got Web2 wallets, Web2 customers, non-crypto, non-blockchain-based systems where there is a need to bridge, or there's a need to intermediate? What do you see the importance of the role of the exchange in that story?
Yeah, an exchange, like I wouldn't say that the exchange will be then the classical element as the exchange. The exchange itself being the infrastructure enabler, as you said, as the bridge between in-game items, token, and so on and so forth. Yeah, being a little bit in the background, I guess. So from our perspective, we are more looking into bridging communities, bridging games, bridging the flow of gamers going from one game to the other. Yeah. And also like developing actually our own games. Yeah. So we are actually looking into creating something special with, on the one hand, our own games, reskinned games, where we get feedback from our community that they want to have one or the other element. And then opening up the door, and we are talking to some providers in this respect, where you're still playing a game which is normally non-custodial, web-free, but you don't have to go the complicated way through your browser with a non-custodial wallet, have to bridge assets there or bring assets there, connect there, maybe have to even confirm, you know, during the game some topics. No, we want to have this integrated, and we are talking to some providers actually, where if you have integrated one of these seamless automatic wallet creations, you can open up like a dApp store of 1,500 games, which are there more or less once you have integrated some of these very seamless, non-recognizable, semi-custodial wallets. Let's put it that way, yeah.
So you've already done the KYC, you've already got an exchange account sitting in the background. So all of the regulation is covered, the ability to manage payments between crypto and fiat if you want to, the ability to swap between crypto assets and gaming assets, that processing can all happen out of the view of the customer, and we can improve the UX.
There's one really interesting point you made here, maybe without having the intention to do so. You know, imagine Amica coming into place, and we don't yet fully know how it will play out. I could very much imagine for Web3 games, for example, that if they are allowing more or less assets coming in, digital assets coming in the games and flowing out, and maybe even doing some transfer of these assets or some buy and sell in some or the other way, or involvement of digital assets, that at some point the regulator comes in, and I'm also not the biggest friend of over-regulation, not at all. But at some point the regulator comes in, hey, and says to games, what you are doing there is actually you're providing crypto asset services. Yeah. And then this also is something where they say, no, I'm just a game. I just want people to have fun. Okay, maybe these are financial assets. And then, you know, a regulated exchange can also play a role from a perspective that a game actually wants or has to integrate with some regulated players to cover transaction monitoring, to cover AML checks, and so on and so forth. Because, I mean, we know that it's actually even possible to do some money laundering through gaming items and so on and so forth. So this is definitely also something where a regulated player, a regulated exchange, with all the tools you need, which are also burdensome and also costly, yeah, on our end, can play a vital role for Web3 games or for games which deal with Web3 assets, with digital assets. Yeah.
For sure. And you're only going to see that getting slightly more complicated when it comes to taxation for some point, or exactly, some sort of cross-border movement of things that have monetary value. You know, at the moment, if I'm trading you my, you know, gold on a particular World of Warcraft game, or if I'm trading with you, I mean, this has been happening for years, right? On eBay or on various different other side platforms in Web2, you've had skins for CSGO traded without blockchain. You've had all sorts of financial transactions that have happened around gaming that probably haven't adhered to taxation regulation for the most part. You know, these are, I wouldn't even call them gray markets because they're out in the open, but the users themselves haven't necessarily managed the taxation of how those things move. If these become new categories, new opportunities for monetization, if we can streamline as much as possible the onboarding for all of the regulatory compliance and KYC, games won't be afraid to go there because you can consume that as a service. If the trading and the monitoring and maybe even instant tax considerations or plugins around taxation and reporting around trading of those assets can happen in a seamless and automated way, you can weave that into part of the checkout experience, possibly. And so again, it's not about putting the burden of pressure on people with Excel sheets, you know, while trying to play computer games. They want to have fun playing computer games. And we should let them. The opportunity, and I guess what we're talking about here, is that we need some regulatory friendly, sophisticated, and great UX technology sitting in the background to enable gamers and game developers to keep gaming.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, also an interesting aspect is we also are positioning ourselves here as a service provider, as you said, not just for the customer or for the gamer, but also for the games actually, and the game developers. You know, they also at some point are sitting on assets, on digital assets which change value. And so they also need to more or less either immediately or very soon hedge themselves against fluctuations if they want to have a sustainable runway more or less secured for themselves. So this is also something where B2B crypto service provider in terms of like automatically or very soon exchanging digital assets into fiat or into something actually DFTs.
Now we're getting into the good stuff. Now we're getting into stables, treasury management. This is some sophisticated stuff that I'm pretty sure no game developer in the world wants to get into, but everyone who's got a banking background is looking at this thinking, I see the opportunity here.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, you've said that the roadmap is 90% there. I mean, the roadmap is never 90% there, but in terms of the first iteration of where you guys wanted to get to with Blocktrade, you're nearly there. Tell us a little bit about the roadmap. So what's coming next? Clearly, kind of evolving the gamification engine is going to be part of it. You just started talking about gaming. Maybe this is a segue to get into it, but what's coming next for you and the team?
Yeah, for us, I mean, Leah, for us, definitely, we're still on the, like, our infrastructure. So the exchange and the broker model and everything around that is constantly evolving. Yeah. So there are a lot of elements on our roadmap for, like, the very basic infrastructure part of our exchange. So we are rewriting the complete exchange, for example, now from Python to Golang. So then there are a lot of elements that come atop. We are working, hopefully, on one of the most interesting, playful, gamified credit card experiences which should come out there. We are working there together with a very interesting company called W Card. Yeah, also working a lot with a lot of football clubs and fashion brands. So this could be as well, it's very interesting for us. And then comes the whole topic around gaming. Yeah. And I mean, as I said, we're looking at gaming from various angles. Yeah. Implementing games on our platform, but also establishing an infrastructure as more or less on the one hand, a token as a service topic for game developers for games. On the other hand, on infrastructure solutions for games, game developers, gamers. So this is actually very high on our roadmap. And then like also strategic topics, as I mentioned, we are tokenizing a whole shareholder base. We're preparing the next equity fundraiser and so on and so forth. So we actually at our management offsite 1 month ago, we identified 50 projects for the next like 6 to 18 months. And yeah, we have established now a fully sophisticated project management office. So we have so much on our roadmap, you can't imagine. It's very plentiful, yeah.
50 programs, I think I counted three, possibly four different business areas, including traditional exchanges, B2B, and the kind of the gaming back office or sort of financialization of gaming as a service, and also more to come. Sounds like you're not short of sort of things that are going on. If you didn't get to hear enough from Christian today, you can go check out his Blocktrade AMAs. I think they're weekly, monthly, bi-weekly. How often are you on the camera? Feels like more than me.
Nah, yeah, around monthly our official AMAs, but I think I was covered in around 30 to 40 podcasts in the last 6 months. So yeah, there's a lot someone can listen to if someone really wants to hear me again and again and again.
There we go. Well, somebody out there will have plenty of fodder to be creating the AI Christian from all of your answers, from all of your responses and all of that. So we can multiply you and kind of send you to other podcasts in the future. And thank you for taking the time to bless this show as well. I know you're busy. I know you've got plenty going on and no shortage of things on the roadmap at the same time. I want to take stock and step back. I like to ask people who are sort of seeing Web3 from different positions, obviously yours as CEO of an exchange. I've asked this to founders of Layer 1s, people who work in infrastructure, SaaS, token projects, NFT projects. What do you think is needed next to see wider adoption of decentralized applications, to see wider adoption of Web3? I don't want to call it mass adoption because I think that's overselling it. I want to see appropriate adoption of decentralized technology. What do you think are the next hurdles for us to get over, or the next kind of major unlocks for us, if we can use a gaming term?
Yes, that's a very interesting question. And maybe I start with one thing I mentioned a few times now, because a lot of people are talking about mass adoption. Like I did a presentation, a physical presentation actually last week in front of just 20 people. Yeah. And it was a very basic one, not about blockchain, but about crypto in general. Yeah. And there also someone asked me, when are we seeing mass adoption of crypto? And I said, like, excuse me. And this was in Germany. I said, like, when are we seeing mass adoption actually of the equity market? I said, I mean, I know the US is much more sophisticated in terms of like actually having shares of companies, but Europe is so much behind, you know. There's still no mass adoption of owning shares of companies. Yeah. So I mean, okay, so that's the one thing I think, like, sometimes we also have to take a step back and think about what's mass adoption. Yeah. And for me, blockchain and crypto is very much actually an infrastructure play. Yeah. For me, mass adoption is that you don't realize that in the background, blockchain technology is being used. Yeah. And I mean, for sure, you can say, okay, once the Lightning Network is more and more used by one or the other point of sale provider, we will see a mass adoption from a point of sale perspective for Bitcoin and for a lot of other tokens. Yeah, I wish this will come, and I'm sure this will come. But on the other hand, it's all about like having blockchain technology, digital assets integrated in a way in the user flow, in the UI UX flow, that you don't even recognize. And that's exactly what I meant earlier on Web3 gaming, as it is so complicated still with having to sign it into your non-custodial wallet and so on and so on. If this goes more or less with one click with your email account, or with automatically having generated like a semi-custodial wallet in the background, yeah? And then I think we see much more interaction. I don't think we will see a mass adoption in this sense that people are fully aware and want to use blockchain technology just for the sake of it. You know, I think that was a long time in our mind, being early adopters in the blockchain space, that people have to or should use and should install their non-custodial wallets and should think through, yeah, what is a bridge? How can, but this has to go automatically, you know? And I mean, when we see this adoption happening, I mean, you can more and more easily, being it on MetaMask or on other applications, like you don't even witness the bridges behind, yeah? That's what I mean, yeah? And as this infrastructure's barriers in the background, you also mentioned with your Binance experience, I had the same experience once when I sent the funds to the wrong chain on one exchange, yeah? And I had to figure out over hours how I get my funds back on Avalanche, for example, yeah? So, like, once this has disappeared and the user doesn't even recognize that they're using blockchain technology, I think then we have seen mass adoption in a different way than we perceive it now that it should happen, yeah?
I really like that. And you gave one of the examples earlier, right? Trade share. If I want to trade my block trade share with somebody else, there's a marketplace for it, or I put out a sell order or whatever else it is, I click trade share, that share is traded to somebody else, and suddenly they have my share and I don't anymore, and I receive money. There's a blockchain transaction that goes on behind that, but in the front end, the user experience is clear. I just want to sell my share. It has a value, it's priced, I sell it. I go to an application to do that. I'm not saying that's going to be for every equity all of the time, but that's one small microcosm of an example that illustrates your point. We don't have to create very sophisticated things to be able to do that. And I think that's incredibly powerful.
Yes.
We have probably time for a quick question or two here. So I'm just kind of passing through some that came out in the comments. And one was specifically around the role of the CEO. It's not every day that you get CEOs of exchanges on the podcast. So I'm grateful that you took time to drop by. What do you see as the most rewarding and hardest parts of being an exchange CEO?
Very good question. For me, the hardest part was definitely when we had to reduce staff after FTX and after our business plan as well collapsed within days. You could see our runway melting with the forecast. So I think this was, and then a lot of things were there combined. You know, you saw we had a liquidity topic. We had to fire people. We had regulatory scrutiny, you know, like it was more, we were pushed, like we had to do an own funds audit. Yeah. We have to do audits. Yeah. You have to do all this transaction monitoring. Everything has to be installed, risks going, and so on and so forth. So we had like, and on the same time, it's getting harder and harder to get bank accounts, you know, like, so, I mean, so the hard part to cover it was, at the beginning of the year, we had like 5 major construction sites, which I had a lot of sleepless nights. Let's put it that way. It was really hard, yeah. But then, like, I mean, it was so powerful how the team, even after we had to lay off like 2/7, so 20 of 70 people, how the team came together, how we were growing together in a very strong way. You know, we didn't even recognize, after losing 2/7 of our workforce, that we have fewer people, you know, we were even more efficient and people were working longer and we were more focused, I think, on the topic. And then we developed things faster and even with more perfection and pulled off the last 7 months a program which has never been seen before, at least in my like professional life. And then I come to the rewarding part. This was so rewarding, you can't imagine. I mean, we had like our token sale, token going live around 1 month ago. And then we had like our summer party and a token launch party more or less afterwards. And you could see all these smiles in the faces, you know, people were so happy about what we achieved together as a team. And this is like, this is so rewarding. And this like is, I think, the perfect combination where you see, okay, the hardest and toughest parts and elements going to, if you go through this deep valley together, you come out stronger, you come back stronger, like you say with injured football players, and that's so rewarding. I mean, yeah, so it makes me so proud and I'm so rewarded about this. So yeah,
love that. again, anyone who's been through one bear market comes out the other side stronger, more hardened with certainly some bias and maybe some hard life lessons learned and maybe a slightly less full wallet than they were when they entered the bear market. But anybody who's done a couple of bear markets, anybody who's done three or four, practically invincible. So yeah. I'm sure that experience, while it will have been hard, will certainly have chastened the team somewhat. I've got a question here from Lucian. When DEX? Are we thinking about a block trade DEX? Is that something that you look at, a decentralized exchange to complement the current exchange model?
Actually, yes and no. So how should I answer?
Are we releasing some top secret alpha here, or do we need to be careful?
No, I don't have to release top secret alpha, but if someone adds one and one with what I said, that we are aiming to integrate more or less the same custodial wallet on the exchange, and one knows that you not just can use a non-custodial or semi-custodial wallet for web3 gaming, but you can also use it for any kind of DeFi or DEX experience, then you can imagine that we also have thoughts around that. And it actually plays, I don't want to create like a DEX, fully fledged DEX. I want to create more like an experience where this is somehow also, like, we aim to integrate web3 games. We also aim to integrate some DeFi elements, let's put it that way, or some DEX DeFi elements. Yeah. And this will mainly, so we're talking to a few players, for example, Spool. I don't know if you know them. They are like, yeah, you can set out strategies, for example, like where you combine all kinds of DeFi elements. And we are looking to integrate this in our soon to be established like function on the exchange. And their DeFi or DEX elements can play a vital or interesting part. And they are also the integration of a semi-custodial wallet actually can play an interesting role. Let's put it that way without releasing too much alpha. Yeah.
There we go. Well, Lucian, you called it. You saw it coming. And Christian, thank you for telling us what you could. Thank you also for giving us a deep insight into the world of exchanges. It's been a challenging few months, but it's impressive to hear all of the things that you guys have in mind. It's nice to hear some slightly different perspectives or some slightly different features and visions around what the role of an exchange can be, how exchanges can help educate, help increase understanding and adoption of Web3, but in other non-traditional ways or in ways that maybe people listening in weren't expecting. So good luck to you. Good luck to the team. Shout out for all the work you're doing. You may now, having finished your football, go and have that shower and the dinner that you've been looking forward to. Thank you for holding out for us so long. Good luck and stay safe out there.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. I already had the shower, but I will definitely, I think, open up one or the other refreshment now. Yeah, thanks for having me. It was really a pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast. As always, opinions in this episode are mine and those of my guests alone. If you want to find out more, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Check out some of the other episodes on the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast and check out the YouTube channel, also called Blockchain Won't Save the World. Stay safe out there.